Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion sur Radio Créon du colloque sur le rapport Taylor-Bouchard qui s'est tenu à Montréal en mai 2009. Welcome to the audio podcast on Radio Créon of the conference on the Bouchard-Taylor report that took place in Montreal in May 2009.
Vous allez voir ça, vous allez nous aimer.
Maintenant, j'aimerais laisser la parole au professeur Kim Ninka.
Thanks. So, when I was reading the report, there was a lot that was very familiar to me from the English-Canadian experience. In a small way, English Canada went through a version of the same debates, and for some of the same reasons. We, too, had a series of incidents that created a lot of anxiety. The Sharia court proposal in Ontario, the arrest of the Toronto 18, the alleged terrorist plot. There was the Axa Parvez honor killing case, and they didn't generate the same kind of media frenzy in English Canada that they did here in Quebec. But there was certainly a lot of anxiety, and so governments. The federal government and provincial governments asked, is this evidence of a crisis? So we had a very similar question in English Canada a few years ago. Are we undergoing a crisis in inter-ethnic relations? And do we need to think about dramatic change in policy? And various research and consultations were done. And the conclusion was, when people looked at the numbers, I looked at the trends that there was no crisis, relations were reasonably good, at least in a broad international comparative sense. So let me just quote, this is from a quote from the Institute for Research on Public Policy, which was one of the bodies that engaged in this sort of attempt to test the crisis hypothesis. So this is the conclusion of their study. There is little evidence of the deep social segregation feared in parts of Europe. Canada is not sleepwalking into segregation. There is no justification for a U-turn in multiculturalism policies comparable to that underway in some European countries. And so that was a similar conclusion was reached by virtually all of the various research or consultations that took place over the last few years in English Canada that the anxiety was overstated, that there was no crisis, and that we should more or less continue in the same direction that we've been heading. And that's reflected in the fact that there is, at the moment, no political party in English Canada that is recommending abolishing multiculturalism or a dramatic U-turn in the policy, and the policy continues to have very high levels of public support, up to 85% in English Canada. Okay, so all of that seems quite a kind of parallel, if you like, to what is said in the Bouchard-Taylor report that we need to all the talk of crisis is overstated and that there's no justification for a U-turn. And in my view, that this parallel shouldn't be surprising because I actually think that the interculturalism in Quebec is very, very similar to multiculturalism in English Canada, that they're more or less the same thing. And that is something that has been indicated by several scholars have actually compared them, in terms of their policy objectives, in terms of their underlying values, in terms of their funding guidelines about what kinds of projects get funded, what kinds of organizations get funded to engage in what kinds of activities. They're basically identical. And that's true both in terms of the policies of interculturalism versus multiculturalism. And it's also, of course, true about the constitutional jurisprudence. So the report distinguishes a kind of narrow legal doctrine of reasonable accommodations from a broader approach of interculturalism. Well, the narrow legal doctrine of reasonable accommodation is, of course, a pan-Canadian jurisprudence. It's not something distinctive to Quebec. It's something that was elaborated by the Supreme Court and elaborated in part by appeal to Article Section 27, the multiculturalism section of the Canadian Charter that says that the Charter of Rights and Freedoms should be interpreted in a way consistent with the multicultural heritage of Canada. So that legal doctrine is one that's similar in Canada, in Quebec and the rest of Canada, and shaped by Canadian multiculturalism. And as I say, the policy of interculturalism and multiculturalism are quite similar. So it shouldn't be surprising that the result of these parallel processes of reflection came to similar conclusions. And that raises a puzzle about why you could have imagined that the report would have buttressed its claims about the fact that there's no crisis in Quebec by pointing out that similar policies are working well in the rest of Canada. The report is concerned throughout to allay the anxieties of Quebecers. You could have imagined that one way to allay those anxieties would be to say, look, you know, we have good grounds for thinking that interculturalism is not a failure, it's not in crisis, because, you know, one confirming piece of evidence is that there's a very similar policy adopted in our neighboring provinces. They too have had anxieties, but the research shows it's working well, and that suggests that, you know, if similar policies are having beneficial effects in the rest of Canada, that should provide some comfort that we're not on the wrong track here in Quebec. So you could have imagined that the report would invoke evidence of the relative success of multiculturalism in the rest of Canada to buttress its claims. It doesn't do that. On the contrary, it doesn't emphasize the ways in which there are similarities between interculturalism and multiculturalism and doesn't try to draw comfort from the fact that both policies seem to be working well. On the contrary, the report in several places implies that whatever interculturalism is, it is absolutely different from multiculturalism. So there's an interesting passage, I mean, not just different from, but actually incompatible with multiculturalism. So on page 39, the report says that there was overwhelming support for interculturalism amongst interveners. Interveners weren't really sure how to define it, but above all, this is a quote, above all, it is not multiculturalism. And later on page 129, it says that there was overwhelming, again repeats that there was overwhelming public support for interculturalism, which was embraced by Quebecers in order to counter Canadian multiculturalism. That, again, is a quote. It was embraced in order to counter multiculturalism. So the picture you get in the report is, okay, so why did multiculturalism need to be countered? Because multiculturalism is blamed for segregation, for creating a society in which there are just islands of different groups rather than any social bond, for focusing exclusively on diversity and not at all on the social bond or solidarity, even blamed for relativism. And so Canadian multiculturalism in these passages is presented as kind of the enemy, which needs to be countered. And so you get a picture of, in some passages of the report, that you have kind of these brave, heroic Quebec legislators and bureaucrats and frontline managers who are engaged in this constant struggle to push for Quebec interculturalism against the corroding influence of Canadian multiculturalism. But fortunately, these Quebec legislators and bureaucrats have succeeded in pushing for interculturalism to counter Canadian multiculturalism. Okay, so that's one of the pictures. There are others in the report that I'll get to, but that's one picture of the relationship between interculturalism and multiculturalism. And in my view, for what it's worth, this is a complete hallucination. There's no examples of that, no concrete examples of that in the report. There's no evidence from the academic literature that there's this kind of battle between that interculturalism has to fight against the corroding influence of Canadian multiculturalism. And in fact, in places, the report acknowledges that. So it's quite interesting, the wording, that the text will say that many Quebecers believe that multiculturalism is responsible for segregation. The report itself doesn't say that. The report doesn't endorse that claim. It says that that's the way Quebecers think about multiculturalism. So it says things like, according to popular opinion, multiculturalism promotes segregation. And indeed, there are sometimes in footnotes references to the idea that maybe Quebecers are wrong to think that this is based on a distorted view of multiculturalism, or there's actually a place where it's described as a caricature, that this popular opinion in Quebec may be a caricature of Canadian multiculturalism. So there are passages in the report that could be read as saying, you know, Quebecers believe there's this titanic struggle between interculturalism and multiculturalism, but that may be a mistake. On the other hand, in the one passage, and this is on 214, where it's most explicitly discussed, and I'll just read it. The report says, sorry, just a sec, that according to a frequently voiced argument, Canadian multiculturalism appears to hamper immigrants and ethnic minorities because it puts forward another model that is incompatible with the Quebec model, i.e. the rule of bilingualism as opposed to that of French as a common public language, multiculturalism as opposed to interculturalism, and dual affiliation as opposed to citizen allegiance. Some of these objections, which various authors have formulated in numerous ways, appear to be founded, while others arouse doubt. So I take that to be just kind of hedging the bets, that it's not clear which of those criticisms is founded, which ones is not, but there's the report, it takes this, I take quite ambivalent stand about the relationship between interculturalism and multiculturalism, saying that Quebecers believe there to be this deep struggle that may be distorted, but then again, maybe it's right. That's where things seem to stand at the end of the report. Okay, so how do we explain this way of talking about this, what I take to be, as I say, quite ambivalent discussion of the relationship between multiculturalism and interculturalism? And again, given that, and to return to my original question, why didn't the report buttress its conclusions, saying that we're on the right track, and some confirming evidence is that we see that a similar policy in English Canada is working well? Why not take advantage of that evidence to buttress its own findings? So I take it that there are two main reasons. This is my speculation about the kind of awkward passages. I mean, there are 18 pages, and I counted them up. There are 18 pages in the report that discuss multiculturalism. And if you just, you know, excerpt them and put them together, they don't fit together very well. There's a lot of ambiguity and even contradiction between 18 and how the description between interculturalism and multiculturalism is related. And that could just be the result of, I mean, maybe there was uncertainty in the minds of the people who wrote the report, or maybe it's because there are always multiple hands involved in writing commission reports. But I actually think there's something that what's going on is, and this is just my speculation, there are certain strategic judgments being made, and that these awkward passages are actually the result of a quite clear political judgment. So I take it that there are two political realities in Quebec that just had to be taken as given for the purposes of the report. The first is that from the point of view of Quebec nationalists, and I include here both the Federalists and the Separatists, is to say from the point of view of the overwhelming majority of French-Canadian, Francophone opinion in Quebec, that interculturalism must be different from multiculturalism. This is an ontological, metaphysical fact, not something that one can empirically verify by comparing funding guidelines or program objectives. And so it would have offended national sensibilities to emphasize similarities between multiculturalism and interculturalism. One instead had to, in order to be heard in Quebec, to instead play up this deep belief that Quebec's a distinct society, therefore it must be different. So that's one reality. The other is very broad consensus belief amongst, seems to me, virtually all Quebec intellectuals that multiculturalism was adopted as a ploy to oppress Quebec. This is a very widespread belief amongst Quebec intellectuals, which I think is also just a complete myth. A lot of work has been done retracing the evolution of multiculturalism, who demanded it, why it arose, how it was debated in the cabinet, how it was debated in the civil service, what its objectives were, and it's just not true that it was adopted as a ploy to oppress Quebec. It was adopted in English Canada for the same reason that Australia adopted it. I mean, Australia was not out to get Quebec. They adopted multiculturalism for its own reasons, and that's why English Canada did, because it's a good policy for dealing with immigrant integration and has proven to be over the past 35 years. But still, that's reality. That's another part of the reality of Quebec nationalist public debate, is that multiculturalism is burdened with this belief, this perception, that it is a ploy by Ottawa to suppress Quebec nationalism. And so I take it that the authors of the report had these two realities in mind. It had to describe interculturalism as fundamentally civilizationally different from multiculturalism, one option would have been to challenge these myths. I take them to be both myths. It's a myth that interculturalism is radically different from multiculturalism, and it's a myth that multiculturalism was adopted to oppress Quebec. And one could have imagined a report that challenged those myths and therefore tried to draw on, and which then would have made possible to appeal to the evidence of the benefits of these similar policies in both contexts. But that would have just been, it's politically unrealistic. It was, there's limited, you know, you got to pick your battles, and it was not, it would have been burdening the report with too much to try to take on those myths, and instead it focused its attention on another set of myths, namely the myths that underlie this perception of a crisis. And I think as a political strategy, that was right. I mean, if I was in the shoes of the authors, I think I would have made the same political judgment, that it's not worth the time and effort trying to tackle those components of the Quebec nationalist ideology. Let's just focus on calming people's anxieties around immigrant integration. And so I think the ambivalent statements, if we took these 18 passages from the report, I think, as I say, they read as a kind of awkward and ambivalent, but I actually think they reflect a deliberate political strategy if the report went deeper into the relationship between multiculturalism and interculturalism, it would have had to tackle some of these myths, and that was just not worth the time and the effort. It was not politically realistic. Okay, so as I say, I think that's more or less a sensible strategy. This is my speculation that there was such a deliberate decision made, and that explains the nature of those 18 passages. But let me conclude with two. I think it leaves two potential problems. So the first is: are these two sets of myths, one about immigrants not wanting to integrate and making unreasonable demands and everything spiraling out of control, is that completely disconnected from the myth that English Canada adopted multiculturalism to get Quebec, and that there's a civilizational difference between interculturalism and multiculturalism? I actually think that these myths at some level are actually connected, and that they reflect similar anxieties and that at the end of the day, this would require a much longer story, but I think that it may be necessary to tackle these kind of myths and paranoias in both directions in order to really address the underlying anxieties. But let me focus on a more specific concern, which Abigail's already mentioned this. I think that the way in which the report both stipulates but then slightly qualifies the distinction between interculturalism and multiculturalism leaves the report's conclusions vulnerable on the role of the legal doctrine of reasonable accommodation. As I mentioned before, that doctrine was adopted by the Supreme Court, and it was adopted, I mean, going back to 1985, and it has been adopted explicitly in light of Section 27 that embraces multiculturalism. And so the report wants to say that jurisprudence is basically good, that the Quebecers should not feel put upon by the fact that they are required to comply with a set of constitutional decisions by the Canadian Supreme Court that have been decided in part on the basis of appeal to the principle of multiculturalism. So the report wants to tell Quebecers, don't feel put upon by the fact that we have to comply with these Supreme Court decisions. That the guidelines that they've created are good, and that they should be part of a broader approach in Quebec to the accommodation of diversity. But if multiculturalism is this bad thing that's fundamentally different from interculturalism, why shouldn't Quebecers object to the Supreme Court jurisprudence? And why shouldn't they object to having to comply with constitutional decisions that have been decided on in part on the basis of Section 27? And so the report discusses this, and I'll just end with this, in an interesting passage on 218, I think. No, sorry. It's right near the end of the... here it is, sorry, 281. And so this is in the appendix, which discusses all of the objections to reasonable accommodation. And so the objection is the Supreme Court, through religious accommodation, is imposing multiculturalism on Quebec. So this is obviously an objection that Quebecers had, and the report needs to respond to it. And I'd encourage everyone to read this paragraph on 281. It's a very interesting, puzzling paragraph. But basically what it says is that the practices that have been endorsed by the Supreme Court have as an outcome the applicants' integration into the common culture, e.g. in the school, for example, the Kirpan case, which is not really in the spirit of multiculturalism as we commonly perceive it in Quebec. Right? So, yeah, it says that the harmonization practices, like the Multani case, that allow the Sikh kids to wear a kirpan, which is, again, decided in part on a basis of a jurisprudence that appeals to Section 27, multiculturalism, that these harmonization practices often have as an outcome the applicant's integration into the common culture, e.g. in the school, which is not really in the spirit of multiculturalism, as we commonly perceive it in Quebec. And so it basically goes on to say that we shouldn't worry about the Supreme Court jurisprudence being imposed on Quebec because it's not really informed by the spirit of multiculturalism. They may have invoked Section 27 of the multiculturalism, but it's not really informed by the spirit of multiculturalism because it promotes integration rather than segregation. I think this is a case in which I think if we want to effectively respond to that objection, we need to be honest and clear and say, yes, the Supreme Court jurisprudence has been shaped by both the law and the spirit of multiculturalism, but that's okay. That I think this is the only way to respond to if we want to persuade Quebecers that the role of the Supreme Court and its jurisprudence is not an imposition, but has been part of a beneficial policy process, that we have to say that the fact that Section 27 has been appealed to is not a problem, because Section 27 is not a bad thing. It's not evil. It's not segregating. It's not isolationist. It's in fact very similar to interculturalism. And that there is no civilizational dispute between them, And so, so this is one of, I think, of a number of cases, I could go on if I had more time, where I think that for political, so in other words, just to sum up, for political reasons, for strategic reasons, I fully understand the decision to not go deeper into the relationship between interculturalism and multiculturalism, because I think it would have had to challenge these very deep nationalist myths. But I think there are some cases, and the issue about the role of the Canadian constitutional jurisprudence around reasonable accommodations are ones where I think we act, at the end of the day, we may have to address those more clearly.